Hi, I'm Chris Marie. I'm so glad you're listening. In conflict, do you ever walk on eggshells, avoid sharing your honest opinion, or even hesitate to say no? Well, no more. Susan and I created a Speak Up Kit just for you. It's an easy-to-use, proven step-by-step process to find your voice and reduce your stress. To learn more, go to thriveinc.com/speak up. That's www.thriveinc.com/speakup. Hi, I'm Chris Marie Campbell.
And I'm Susan Clark.
And today our guest is Allison Manzi. And you like to go by Allie, is that true?
That's correct.
Okay. Allie is the founder of Ion Wellness, a cognitive health service company that offers consulting packages and workshop memberships for corporations that want to build a high-performing team from the inside out. Specializing in self-narrative, human behavior, habit change, achievement psychology, fitness and nutrition, she's built a model that focuses on creating effective relational systems within ourselves and with others. Her mission is to return the power of autonomy to the individual, enabling them to rewrite the story they tell themselves about who they are, what they're capable of, and what their lived experience means to them. How exciting,
yes,
Allie. Thank you for being on the show.
Yeah, my pleasure. That sounded so much better when you read it back. It got me excited.
I love that. Allie, how did you get interested in this field of work?
It was a natural evolution. I certainly never intended to be in behavioral science or sort of the psychology realm. I actually went to college for musical theater and planned to be a Broadway actress. Quickly gave up on that. And then I became a personal trainer. And I absolutely fell in love with it. Like my third weekend, I was like, this is for life. This is my thing. I locked in. I loved helping people. And going from very like scientific, binary, biological coaching practices, like very much in the soma, it was a detached approach of helping people. And I went so far into the science of fitness and nutrition where I was like, okay, I had this locked down. Like I can write the best wellness program for anybody. I was so excited. I was like top trainer in New York and I'm writing these awesome programs and people were still failing. They were still not showing up or quitting or not reaching their goals. And I was so frustrated. I was like, but this is all the information. This is what you need. Like, why isn't it working? And so then I started to look into behavioral habits of like consistency and motivation, discipline. And that really led me down the path of more of the mindset of human behavior, of why people do what they do and what allows them to stay connected to a process or what makes them incentivized to grow or go through discomfort or go through these challenging periods to become a better version of themselves. So that's how I got into the mindset part of it. And then I translated it into the corporate workplace because I was in a corporate job for a long time and coached on the side. And I saw how much of this same cognitive dissonance or these same like inhibitory thought patterns affected people in the workplace, not being able to get things done, not being able to reach their goals, missing sales, all that kind of stuff. And I was like, wow, this conversation is not happening in the workplace at all. It's more common in the gym space. People are really ready to show up and test themselves. And the grit is commonplace in the gym. But in the workplace, it was just defeat everywhere and people getting in their own way. So that's when I really decided to marry the two and fill that gap in the corporate workspace.
I love it. And it's the mindset piece. I'm an Olympic athlete, so I know the whole discipline and training and it's really different. Or for me, it has been different when you talk about the difference between corporate and the gym is how to change those habits that I've learned that are psychological, that I've learned to survive and get along versus somebody might be mad at me if I do that, or I'm taking a risk. Those are like the threat of survival comes up and it's harder to change those. And I do a lot of work myself on that, but how have you dealt with, or even people that myself included have trauma that is very stopping them from making changes?
Yeah. How have I worked with them? Or yeah. For sure. That's funny because in our culture, it's getting better, but in our culture, there's a little bit of resistance to like mental health work. And a lot of people they still carry that outdated stigma of any kind of like therapy. And there's a lot of people who need this kind of introspective work, but they won't ever touch therapy, quote unquote. But being able to be in the context of the workplace, I've been able to connect with and infiltrate people's behavioral practices through the guise of workplace performance, right? And it's almost, and I'm like, whatever, I'll take what I can get. I'll do whatever works. You got to hide the spinach and the brownies, I usually say. Whatever works. Speak their language. And I lure them in with, oh, workplace performance. Like, you'll be more successful, like dangling that like capitalist carrot. Come on. And people are more willing to participate. And I think the biggest thing to your point is creating safety for people, right? A lot of people split their authentic self in the workplace. They step off the elevator and they put on a mask because there's so much shame for them around behaviors that they feel like are less desirable, right? Like being a people pleaser or a procrastinator or being a bad leader or having like uncontrollable anger, right? And they really shut those parts of themselves down and hide them through a layer of shame. And as we know, with any kind of trauma work, shame is a preliminary wall you have to break through, right? So it's a lot of creating safety for them in normalizing, just like you said, the context of these habits where people think, oh, if I'm doing this less than desirable behavior, I'm broken, I'm weak, I'm incapable, I'm inept, right? I'm underqualified, whatever. And that just buries it down more. So I've really been working to help them understand that all of these habits, whether it's people pleasing or procrastinating or like high achievement or like stress addiction, that these are all natural things that, like you said, we use to protect ourselves. They serve us in some way or used to serve us. So helping them understand where it came from, teaching them compassion through leading with compassion, making space. Yeah, I totally understand. That's so human, like relating to them. And letting them just understand, okay, this is just a tool. Where do I need it? Where do I not need it? Can I let go of it and move into a different pattern? And helping them break that identity of it's not who I am. It's just something I'm doing, right? It's just a behavior. It's just an action. It's just a habit. And it's not who I am. It's not inherent. I'm not stuck there. If I change my habits and behaviors, I'm no longer that person anymore. So detaching the identity from the habits as well.
Yeah, I like that idea. Did you have a question that you were going to say? No. So even when you're talking about, because it sounds like you create safety and you have this, you were talking about psychological before we started the recording. We were talking about psychological safety. So how do you go about creating that, especially in the corporate workplace where you see that sense of defeat all around?
Mm. Yeah, this is huge. And talking about sort of conflict, there's so much conflict in where people are projecting. Their egos are projecting onto other people. It's their own kind of either insecurities or fears or self-perception that ends up being, it comes out as a criticism or a judgment or why would you do that? Or that was stupid or that's a dumb idea. Or, I don't like that. Or are you kidding me? All these kind of inflammatory responses that shut people down. And it's funny because so much of my work is based on the individual and their happiness and their internal climate and their success. But There's no difference between the individual feeling safe and being successful and optimizing their potential and then the company as a whole reaching success and optimizing their potential, right? So it's interesting how all of these self-development practices actually impact the bottom line, right? So when we talk about psychological safety in the workplace especially, you can see the difference between a leader who their team feels safe coming to them and saying, I messed up, I made a mistake, I'm not sure this is going to go wrong. I'm feeling disheartened or discouraged or whatever. And then that person, that leader is able to help, right? They enable that person to offer a solution or intervene or prevent or support or resource them. So being able to hold back our own projections and judgments and just create that, again, psychological safety of not making people feel like they can't be honest because there's going to be some kind of repercussion. Right. And then they can tell the truth. And the more honest people can be, obviously, the better the company is and the better the team is and the better the individual is. Right. We can do a lot more with the truth.
Yeah. I like what you're saying. A lot of it in agreement with. I do think probably the one position I might think about is I think people assume that psychological safety means it's okay to come and make a mistake and somebody's going to help you and it's all going to go okay. And I don't actually think that's generally psychologically safe. That's actually just usually stuff has been buried and it's not in a someone is in a very threatened position who's a leader and they are mad and stuff didn't happen and it's okay. And I think sometimes the only way to do that is to really acknowledge, like, right now, I am angry. I don't like the fact that this isn't happening. And to actually get into that discomfort zone, which you might be talking about, to actually not, that is actually helping people be able to tolerate that discomfort is really what creates psychological safety.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think for a lot of people, it is easier to avoid the conversation, make something up, put it off, maybe tell a lie, right? That is easier. And
I was thinking it's like an exercise where you think, okay, I'm going to get stronger and better, but I'm never going to be in any physical pain while I'm doing that because I'm just going to listen to my body and only do so much. And yet when I know when I'm getting myself back in shape,
it hurts.
It's painful. I'm not really enjoying this moment where someone's yelling at me to push harder. Even if they're not really yelling, that's what it sounds like.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. And it's that short-term discomfort that you invest for a better long-term payoff, better relationships, better connections, better success, better performance, better productivity. And I really like what you said about it's not about just, oh, it's okay if you completely mess up and who cares, right? I had a conversation with one of the leaders on a team who was worried about, oh, if I'm too compassionate, then are people just going to stop doing what they need to do? Am I going to let them off the hook? Are they going to stop showing up? And I think that's a fair concern. And I think it's important to pay attention to the distinction between compassion and a lack of shame and then accountability. So they're not mutually exclusive. You can be compassionate and be free of shaming somebody or saying harmful, hurtful things and still hold them accountable, still be clear about the expectation, still express, like you said, oh, I'm frustrated or I'm a little disappointed. That's okay, how I'm feeling. And still holding to any consequence, right? If you don't hit this deadline, then we're going to have to move you to a different department or whatever the case, whatever the agreed upon consequence. You can still do that in a kind way, right? So really what we're talking about, the distinction between, it's not letting people off the hook or ever holding them to their word or their performance, but taking away the sort of personal attack, right? You're an idiot. How could you do that? That was stupid. You're a failure. Anything like that comes from our own projection, right? And if you're really, truly mad somebody let you down or something went wrong, that's okay. And the projection is the difference between your reaction is not really appropriate or doesn't really match what happened. And we can usually spot that a mile away when you're like, why are they getting so mad? But you mess up one email or something like that and they go off the rails. That's the kind of stuff that we want to pay attention to where the response feels like it appropriately matches the instance.
It's interesting because you can have the opposite effect too, where you're being very clear and frank and somebody just takes it and they make it, oh my God, they go into their shame spiral. And there's really sometimes no way of actually breaking it. And they're convinced of their story of you're making them wrong, and down the track they go and talking about it to everybody else. And it's, that's the other end of the spectrum.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And I would say that's still a projection, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But how much intervene if that person though, people have to want to how am I contributing to the situation?
Yeah.
Many people are not, they're stuck in their story and they think it's truth. And it's, you can see it a mile away. If you're in a grounded place, some people get hooked in and they're like, you're right. That was bad, because they have their own family story that they're going down now.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really when I talk about, I just led a workshop 2 weeks ago on intentional communication, and both parties have to meet halfway, right? I've had people go off the deep end, even though my literal profession and practice is holding compassionate space for people. And they still are in another realm. And like you said, there's only so much you can do. So it is their work also. And you can only do so much to help, but you just want to make sure you're doing your 50, right? And then the other person has the option to meet you there or not. And I also think that the more you can acknowledge and welcome these sort of triggered responses, and I don't want to say call them out, because that can be aggressive, but almost, hey, I see that you seem to be feeling really activated right now. Is there anything that you want to talk about? Why do you think that you're feeling so triggered by this? It's really, I promise it's not I'm not as upset as you are. Do you want to talk about what you're feeling? You know what I mean? Just like elephant in the room, because I think as much as we deny it and try to pretend it's not there or get our hooks in that story, like you said, I always think of one spouse screaming about a sock on the floor. It's never about the sock.
No, yeah, right? It's been a lot of other things besides
the sock. Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I see you're really upset about the sock, but it seems like you're getting really activated. Is there something else that's connected to this? Because they'll hang on to the sock story because they don't want to ignore it. Someone can be like, hey, this seems like you're a little bit more upset. Is there anything else? And then letting that just flow into the space.
As long as you're not, so often happens is the sock, but that means the toothbrush. And so we're now tit-tat, we're on this, again, the spiral. It happens so quickly.
It does. Yeah. It does. And that's the resentment, right? That's right. When we don't express those things and they build up. And then we're talking about a sock, but we're really talking about the last 5 years that you haven't helped me around that house.
Right. Exactly.
And I was also thinking, so I do think there's probably two ways to enter this. And I mean, I can really get the cognitive lens that you come through, even with the wording, because sometimes giving someone a word like activated or you're upset, what's going on? I was also thinking sometimes coming in, and if that doesn't create any room, and saying, I know this happens between us a lot. And I can say, look, I feel I'm actually feeling pretty helpless right now. Like, I can't really do anything. I don't know what to do. I want to help you. Part of me thinks, and then there's another part of me that thinks you can handle this, but I don't know because I feel uncomfortable. Like, that vulnerability is another way, I think, that aside from the cognitive lens, to shift the energy, to give it a room, to have people begin to look at it differently. Like, oh, that's interesting. And I don't know.
I think that's even what you're saying with the compassion, holding a compassionate space in that place. And compassion is such and vulnerability, such corporate, oh my God, words.
Oh, yeah.
Like, no, we're not going to go there. And I can see in a lot of how self-critical so many people are, like what you're saying, they shove it down. I can't be that way. And so then I have all this weird behavior, and how learning how to be self-compassionate. Oh, yeah, I made a mistake. I'm okay. I'm going to survive, even if you don't think I will. Boss, person. Like finding ways to self-soothe in those environments is really critical, and it's not taught at all the organization.
No, it's huge. And that's a big part of my sort of personal mission, is like bringing some matriarchal leadership values back into a patriarchal society. Not to replace one or the other, because we want balance. And matriarchal leadership is very different from patriarchal leadership. It's not opposite. They have individual strengths. And if they can both be integrated, you can have the organization and the clear direction and the quantified goals and the structure and the processes. And then also you can have consideration and creativity and compassion and nurturing and fluidity and adaptability. Imagine a world. And that's a big part of moving out of seeing people just as workers and seeing like that individual human, like we all have families and friends and dreams and heartbreaks and disappointments and fears and sicknesses. And so trying to incorporate that whole human approach into the workplace is really important. And like you were saying about seeing somebody else being activated and feeling helpless, it's hard because just like we can get this like chain reaction, right? One person gets triggered, they start projecting, oh, now I'm triggered, now I'm projecting back, and it's like a negative spiral. But we can also create a positive spiral where if you have enough self-awareness where you see someone being activated and you can just hold your ground, you don't have to fix it, just to try to stay regulated. Yeah, I hear you. I totally understand. Tell me more. And just holding your ground. I'm not trying to fix it, but I'm just going to lead with, like you said, vulnerability and curiosity. It's always, tell me more. What's that feeling like for you? And just keeping that space. And sometimes you can start a positive chain reaction in the other direction. Well, you started the vulnerability, so now they show up with vulnerability, right? And you can create that positive spin. So it's really empowering. You can be that catalyst sometimes, for sure.
Were you going to
say
something?
I just want to clarify that I don't necessarily think of saying I'm feeling helpless right now as activated. So I want to make sure that's actually the vulnerability, is to acknowledge this is the feeling state I'm in. And the vulnerability, actually, sometimes vulnerability could say, right now I'm feeling really angry and I don't want to project that, but that's what I'm feeling.
Yeah.
The naming of it.
I think so often with anger, a lot of times anger is just spewed at people versus actually. And so then we don't want to acknowledge anything versus right now I am angry. So I am taking care. Like people may have their own projections of what anger is, like, oh my God, die.
Yeah.
But to name the feelings. And we just led a leadership development. It was basically like having a spine, the backbone that's masculine, and having the heart, which is more those pieces. And it really is that they're both appropriate, just what you're saying.
That's critical.
Yeah,
absolutely. And anger is one of those things where, like we were talking about, in a sort of patriarchal structure where it's one of the very few emotions that are accepted for men. And anger is sacred. It's a beautiful thing. It's not wrong. It's not bad. Anger is a response to injustice. That's your body or your spirit saying, hey, this isn't okay with me. It's not going to fly. And that's healthy. We want to protect ourselves. So that kind of divine rage, sacred rage, whatever you want to call it, where it is like a response to injustice, we love it. We want to make space for it. I think the only time when people have a sort of negative response to anger is when it feels like it's either like violent or attacking or like taking it out on somebody else instead of holding it for your own, right? Like, here, you're going to hold my anger. I'm going to attack you, harm you verbally, emotionally, whatever. And now it's yours, right? I don't want to hold it. So now it's yours. And a lot of the patriarchal ideas of you're not allowed to be sad, disappointed, let down, hopeless, fearful. And so all of those things get bottled up into anger and it feels almost misplaced. And it's hard to work with that when someone's not really telling you what the real problem is.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have to say you remind me of the patriarchy and the matriarchy. I don't know if you've been to Mama Gina, but that's like her in New York. Oh, it's definitely fits that model. So it's she's right near you. So you should try her program.
Well, she's in Colorado now.
Oh, no, that's right. You're not Colorado. You were in New York. That's why I'm thinking that. If you had a tip to leave our listeners with today, they're just in their corporate worlds struggling. What's one thing that you could offer for them to feel more empowered?
Yeah, I would say probably what we touched on earlier before the call of thinking about the subjective lens of the ego. That's been one of the most empowering things that I've learned in terms of not feeling like my reality or truth is being challenged, right? So understanding that the same instance or the same event or the same conversation or the same experience can happen to two different people. And based on their past experiences, they're going to interpret the meaning of that experience, event, conversation through their own colored lens. So two people can have an extremely different experience with the same event, and they are both true. And if someone has a different experience of something, that doesn't mean that it disqualifies your experience. They are not mutually exclusive. They can, and in fact, do coexist. And as soon as we can understand that somebody else's lived experience and their reality, we don't feel like we have to argue over whose reality is the truth. And this is what I saw. This is what happened. They're lying. And maybe sometimes, but for the most part, understanding that we assign different meaning and different stories to the same experiences as other people, and they're both true and valid, and they do not have to contradict each other. We have the power to have fluidity in our subjective experience. And the more that we can have compassion, not only for ourselves to have our own subjective experience. Wow, maybe I overreacted to that, but also having compassion for other people when we're like, oh, it's not a big deal. Why are they so upset? You're being dramatic or whatever. So having compassion that like that may be their lived experience and that's how they're interpreting that event, right? And have compassion for whatever painful experience they had that makes them feel that way. So we can have these dual realities and finding the understanding in the other person of what their experience was like and then sharing yours is ultimately going to lead you to a better connection, better communication, and finding a mutual solution rather than fighting it out.
Excellent. We definitely believe in
that.
Where can our listeners find out more about you?
Yeah. So you can find me on Instagram at @ion_wellness, AION, and ionlifestyle.com. You can find all my links there, media, website. You can reach me for private sessions, private workshops, corporate workshops, and consulting.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you, Allie. This has been delightful.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Well, thanks for joining us. We hope you found today's episode valuable. If you want to take some of what you've learned on today's episode to the next level, check out our new step-by-step, easy-to-use team kit to get your team from avoiding conflict to discovering the beauty in conflict.
Go to www.thriveinc.com/teamkit to learn more. That's www.thriveinc.com/teamkit.